Good afternoon. You're listening to Unusual Sources, the news radio program about international affairs and labor affairs on CFMU 93.3 FM. Our first guest is here to talk about the war in South Ossetia today. He's international human rights and labor lawyer David Jacobs. Now, David has stood as defense counsel at the International Criminal Tribunal in Rwanda, as well as giving legal perspectives on the invasion of Yugoslavia in 1999. He's been a guest of our program to speak on international law before, and so let's go over to him now. Hi, David.
Hi.
I guess the first question on everybody's minds when we're speaking with a lawyer is, who violated international law here? You know, who broke the law and what was the violation?
On August 7th, August 8th, Georgia attacked South Ossetia. The question is, was that attack a legitimate use of force under international law, or was it a war crime? There are grounds for legitimate use of force in international law. One would be in self-defense. And self-defense may be stretched to include the defense of another country with whom one has a mutual assistance treaty or something of that nature. The only other possibility would be to launch a war authorized by the United Nations in response to a breach of international peace and security, war authorized by the Security Council after having gone through the measures set out in the UN Charter. Neither of those events is contemplated by the actions of Georgia. So one must look at then what the law thinks about other types of war. Now, in terms of breaches of international law, any other type of armed attack or armed aggression is contrary to international law. And according to the Nuremberg Tribunal, there are three levels of war crimes. There's crimes against the peace, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. And according to the Nuremberg Tribunal, and this is law which is now pretty set in international law, the most serious of all war crimes is the crimes against the peace. Crimes against the peace are defined as a war of aggression or a war contrary to international treaties. So commencing a war of aggression or a war contrary to international treaties is a crime against the peace. And according to the Nuremberg Tribunal, which put it rather elegantly, the crime of aggression is the crime which contains within it the evil of all other war crimes. So all other war crimes, crimes against humanity and war crimes, flow from the crime of crime of aggression, the war of aggression. So having said all that, I think the question is how you look at the history of the region. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, of course there was kind of a spin-off of various other countries which declared that they didn't want to be part of the what was then the old Soviet Union or the Confederation of Independent States, which gathered around Russia and so on. And there was a kind of centrifugal effect where a lot of countries neighboring Russia flew into the west of orbit, so to speak. At the same time, there was an implosion of multinational nation states, particularly in the Balkans, and ensuing fighting, and as you mentioned earlier, the NATO attack on Yugoslavia, Yugoslavia splitting into lots of statelets, the latest example being Kosovo declaring independence, and that independence being recognized by the West. Now, after 1991, with the independence of Georgia and other states, South Ossetia, which is sort of just north of Georgia and sort of nestled between Georgia and Russia, the South Ossetians voted in favor of independence in a referendum. And there was sporadic violence and so on in 1992 until there was an agreement, an armistice agreement, an agreement to create a peacekeeping force between Russian, Georgian, and South Ossetian leaders. So from 1992 to date, there have been Russian peacekeepers in South Ossetia. Now, Georgia has not attempted to assert control over South Ossetia between 1992 to date. there's a series of events. South Ossetia drafted its own constitution in 93 and 96. It elected its own parliament, and in 2001 it elected a president. Now, of course, the Georgians didn't recognize these elections, but it didn't take military efforts to do anything about it. Now, in 2004, Mikhail Saakashvili, the current president of Georgia, won a presidential election, and part of his election promises was his intention to bring South Ossetia, Abkhazia, and another area called Ajaria back into the fold. After that, the people of South Ossetia voted overwhelmingly again in favor of independence from Georgia in another referendum. And after the recognition of Kosovo, South Ossetia asked the world to recognize its independence. However, since Georgia was close to the United States and South Ossetia was not, the United States and the Western countries did not recognize the independence of South Ossetia. In April, Georgia proposed a power-sharing deal with South Ossetia, which was rejected by the South Ossetians, who enjoyed their de facto independence and their de facto status as an autonomous region. So what happened after that? In Saakashvili, president of Georgia, is very close to the United States. The United States touts him as a great Democrat, notwithstanding the fact that he brutally put down riots after he suspended and postponed elections.
I've been reading the same things. He's not such a nice guy. I mean, there's been a lot of protests and opposition. Certainly there were those violent repression of the demonstrations.
Oh, he's imprisoned and killed opposition and so on, none of which appears to bother the United States. It certainly doesn't create much of a blip in our media, unfortunately.
Well, he's one of our strongmen, it seems.
He's one of ours in a very big way. I mean, the Americans, in April of this year, stationed something like 1,000 Marines in Georgia. George Bush, in April of this year, came out and strongly supported Saakashvili's bid to enter NATO. I mean, we just have to back up a little bit here and talk about NATO for a second. NATO stands for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and it was set up after World War II as a Western response with the nations of Europe around the North Atlantic and the United States to counter the Soviet Union and to counter the Warsaw Bloc of countries, or what became the Warsaw Bloc of countries. Georgia is very far afield from the North Atlantic. It's not part of the North Atlantic. And one would have expected, given the mission statement, so to speak, of NATO, that NATO would become superfluous, unnecessary, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. However, the opposite has happened. NATO has actually grown in numbers and strength since the collapse of the Soviet Union and is engaged in further encirclement of Russia, again, since the collapse of the Soviet Union. In fact, talking about putting nuclear weapons in what was Czechoslovakia and the Czech Republic and so on. So one would think all that would unnerve the Soviets. But again, not only, by the way, so to go back to the historical narrative, not only do we have 1,000 U.S. Marines in Georgia, but you have, I think, an almost equal number of Israeli security forces, Israeli arms, and so on, coming into Georgia. The pipeline which people talk about, an oil pipeline is being built or has been built through Georgia in an attempt to bypass and undermine the oil pipeline which passes through Russia. That is in a joint venture with the Israelis. The Israelis, by the way, have sort of proudly touted their role in assisting the Georgian forces. So on there have been various maneuvers, military maneuvers, joint military maneuvers between the Americans and the Georgians, well, intensifying kind of, lately.
It sounds like NATO buddies are us. I mean, it's like Georgia's a NATO military base. There's U.S. trainers training the Georgian military and Israeli trainers. There's the United States is equipping the Georgian military. I've seen the pictures. They have M-16s and other equipment. They've been equipped by the Americans. And to top it all off, Georgia is the third largest partner in the coalition of the willing invading Iraq.
Yes, well, you're right, they're third in the coalition of the extremely willing. And during the current fighting, the Americans have flown 2,000 Georgian troops back to Georgia to be involved in the fighting, something which has upset the Russians, understandably and tremendously. So we've come a long way around to get to your first question, which is, who's violating international law? Well, actually, Georgia invaded South Ossetia on the evening of August 7th. The timing seems to have been to coincide with the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games, so as to catch the world while it was distracted by the Olympic Games. So that's number one. But I mean,
maybe they thought if they got it over quickly enough that no one would bat an eye and it would be a done deal.
It's hard to know what exactly they thought. I mean, there are a number of possible scenarios, but if that history which I've recited is accurate, that is, you have a nation in South Ossetia which has been de facto independent for at least 16 years, where the majority of its citizens carry Russian passports, and where there is an armistice deal which, as far as I know, is a treaty. And it's a treaty which existed up until August 7th of this year. Then the aggressor is clearly Georgia, and Georgia is in breach of international law, and Georgia is has attacked South Ossetia, which is de facto independent and de facto sovereign, if not de jure. And even apart from that, even if you don't agree that that it is de facto sovereign and independent, one would have to agree that the attack was in breach of the armistice agreement reached with the Russians some 16 or so years ago. So the Georgian government appears to be guilty of crimes against the peace and the supreme war crime. Now, in response to that, by the way, one reads the crawl on CNN tonight where George Bush says that he wants to kick Russia out of the G8 and Russia is being treated as the aggressor. But, I mean, shortly after the Georgian attack on South Ossetia, Saakashvili called a ceasefire, and in the middle of the ceasefire attacked the capital city of South Ossetia, if I'm going to pronounce it right here, Skinner Valley, I think, or Skinner Valley. Now, that attack, according to most observers and the Reuters reports, resulted in the deaths of something like 1,500 civilians. So whether or not the attack on South Ossetia was a crime against the peace, the bombing of South Ossetia by the Georgian forces was certainly a war crime. An attack on civilian areas, and the Russians have counterattacked, and so also South Ossetia's neighbor Abkhazia is in support of Russia and South Ossetians against the aggression of the Georgians. It's very difficult to play it any other way, but the media seems to want to describe Russia's reaction as an action against Georgia.
I have to agree there. Look at the way the media's been playing it, because when the conflict first started, you were getting more even-handed coverage from the media. It would say something like, Georgia has shelled a place in South Ossetia. They have invaded that area. Russia is counterattacking. They would give a play-by-play of what was happening. And now it's all about Russia's invading Georgia. Russia has to stop its aggression. The big Russian bear and so on, all this old rhetoric from the Cold War.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Russia no longer is a communist threat, quote-unquote. It no longer has more than 400 nuclear launching pads directly aimed at Europe. These were dismantled after the demise of the USSR. So why is Russia being surrounded by the U.S. and its allies? The Russian troops in South Ossetia were there on an internationally recognized peace mission, and were duty bound under the one would think under the terms of their engagement to protect South Ossetia from this aggression.
Well, I've never seen anyone dispute that, David. It's recognized that the Russian peacekeeping force was there under consent and had been discussed in agreements with the Georgians. They were supposed to be there, and then all of a sudden the place they were present was attacked by Georgia. It was invaded.
When we talk about Saakashvili himself, I mean, one has to remember that he was a practicing lawyer in the United States in New York City. You know, again, on his election, he had some aggressive demands in respect of South Ossetia. So you can get the facts by reading the internet. Probably useful to read the Russian English language press. It creates has a variety of views in it now, but I don't think you're going to get the true story by reading the Globe and Mail, frankly, or the Toronto Star, for that matter. And the Globe and Mail today has this kind of breathtaking piece by somebody who was one of the leaders of Radio Liberty. Radio Free Europe was one of the right-wing radio stations that beamed itself into the Soviet Union, was a serious Cold War advocate, I suppose you'd say. And that man bemoans the fact that we don't appear to recognize that the Cold War isn't over and that Russia is just the old Soviet Union in new clothes. Of course, I mean, I suppose he needs a career, so, you know, anti-communism and anti-Russianism, I suppose, are one of the same things for this person.
A lot of old soldiers coming out of the woodwork.
Yes, I mean, looking for the paychecks, you know.
You're talking about the broader context in which this was occurring and NATO's presence in Georgia and the tensions that had occurred after the breakup of the Soviet Union. What we're seeing, and if you look on websites like Global Research and other websites, is an encirclement of Russia.
Absolutely.
As you said, instead of NATO shrinking, it's become larger. It's become more broad in its geographical area, and it's pushing further east. And I guess this conflict that we just saw, it's sort of a manifestation of a fault line. They're pushing eastwards, and they've hit a rock. It's almost like Russia's now saying, you know, stop right here. We're not going to take it any further than this. They're drawing a line.
Well, from the point of view of Russia, of course, this is extraordinarily dangerous. It's not just economically dangerous for them in terms of the attempts to strangle Russia economically by cutting off its pipeline or creating this parallel pipeline. But if you look at the geography of the area, Georgia and South Ossetia, Georgia in particular, borders on Turkey, Armenia, Azerbaijan, which are all just sort of pretty close by, and north of Iraq and Iran. So there are a number of things, and NATO, we I think now wrongly perceive as a European military alliance. Of course, it's a military alliance that's projected itself into Afghanistan, which is far from Europe. But if you think of U.S. control over Afghanistan, U.S. control of Iraq, U.S. control of Georgia, the next target, of course, being Iran, and then you can see the reason why the U.S. Israeli alliance is anxious to support Saakashvili and push South Ossetia into the Georgian fold. It accomplishes a number of goals. But one is, as you say, the encirclement of Russia, and the other is the preparations for attacks on Iran, which is all that the Israeli government sees as being in its interest. I mean, on Israeli newspaper websites, they're boasting about Israeli advisors and such in Georgia assisting in killing Russian soldiers in the current conflict. So all of this looks fantastically dangerous. I mean, the possibilities of broader war are tremendous. It looks very much like the United States and its allies are looking at the world as kind of a chessboard and moving their pawns into position and prepare. The U.S. now has, as they say, boots on the ground in all kinds of places where they never had boots on the ground before in the Middle East. Many boots on the ground, of course, in Saudi Arabia, in, as I understand it, the Gulf states, and, of course, in Iraq, and then further east in Afghanistan. Russia has no such deployment of forces outside its borders.
So given NATO's war in Yugoslavia in 99, then the attack on Afghanistan and Iraq and the interventions, smaller interventions around the world, what would you say are the developments in international law that led to the situation surrounding Georgia and Russia today?
Well, I think there are two issues here. I mean, one is the extraordinary degrading of international law since the attack in Yugoslavia. I mean, to be frank, it started before then with the U.S. attacks on Grenada, Panama, and I suppose even before then with Vietnam. But they became more serious, and the U.S. seemed to develop a theory of openly flaunting its disregard for international law with the attack, the NATO attack on Yugoslavia, and then the attack on Iraq and so on. And again, concomitant with that was the effort to destabilize multinational nation states, and that's most obvious with Yugoslavia, which prior to the NATO attack, the Croatians were encouraged to secede from the multinational nation state of Yugoslavia, which had been, to be fair, a very peaceful and working multinational entity from the creation of Yugoslavia under the leadership of Tito after World War II, right up until the secession of Croatia. Croatia seceded in a manner which was almost guaranteed, I shouldn't say almost, it was guaranteed to create war, given that the borders sought by Croatia and how that encroached upon Serbian territory. That spiraled into civil war and then the armed attack by NATO, and that led into the splintering of Yugoslavia into a number of small stateless. That splintering keeps on going. The attack on Iraq was obviously a crime of aggression contrary to international law, and it's very difficult to find legal scholars who would say otherwise. Similarly, I must say, for the attack on Afghanistan, which was unprovoked, and again, not a war which could be authorized by international law. So having said that, the hypocrisy of everything that's happened to date is readily evident. The secession of Kosovo from Serbia, notwithstanding the fact that there didn't seem to be a legal basis, was readily and quickly recognized by the United States and others, notwithstanding that Kosovo is essentially a narco-terrorist state governed by remnants of the Kosovo Liberation Army, which was widely regarded as the biggest drug traffickers and terrorists in Europe, even by the CIA and Interpol, before they managed to take control of Kosovo. It's a state which has no real independence. It's a state which is almost entirely controlled by NATO troops and which doesn't have any independent government. Its government is subject to European diktat, including the name, nature of its ministers and its defense capabilities and so on. But having said that, when South Ossetia wishes, in fact, to declare independence following the example of Kosovo, it's essentially rebuffed by the West. And frankly, I don't think even the Russians formally recognize independence. But having said that, it wanted to maintain at least the status quo that it had been maintained for 16 years, and the status quo which in at least two referenda was supported by the majority of the population. They find that they're treated radically differently by the world, notwithstanding the fact their claims to independence are much more powerful than the claims of the Kosovars. But when you say Kosovars, it's difficult to say there are such people as Kosovars. There are Albanians who live in Kosovo. There are Serbs who lived in Kosovo. They've been, quote-unquote, ethnically cleansed from there. And my understanding, I could be wrong on this, South Ossetia and the balance and Georgia are quite different nationalities, different languages, and so on. So international law is now a mess, actually. It can't be, it's difficult to uphold it for one group of people and not another. Again, at the end of the day, frankly, you can see that in the actions of the international criminal tribunals which have been set up. They don't seem to be prosecuting anybody except people from what used to be called the Second and Third World, and certainly in the overwhelming majority, enemies of the United States. And as for the International Criminal Court itself, which was supposed to usher in a wonderful new era of peace and pacific ways of resolving disputes and of doing away with what they call a culture of impunity, they've only managed to indict black Africans. So in a world where people like Saakashvili and George Bush and so on throw around their might, let's add Stephen Harper into the mix, and they do it with absolute impunity and cause horrific death and destruction in places like Yugoslavia, now across the Balkans, and Iraq. Iraq, by the way, which was also a multinational state and which is devolving into ethnic strongholds and so on, as is Afghanistan, for that matter. There's no punishment and apparently no crime.
Well, certainly international law is a jumble these days, and I think we're going to be focusing on that even next week when we have Edward S. Herman on the show to discuss in some detail the International Criminal Tribunal in Yugoslavia, which has the flaws that you've been describing.
A wonderful writer.
Yes, excellent, and we'll be sure to mention where people can find his articles. As we're coming towards the end of the program, I'm just reminded how at the end of The Daily Show, they always have that moment of zen when they show an outrageous comment or something hilarious. And just looking at the coverage of Georgia, they have mentioned that Bush criticized Moscow for shelling Georgian targets. He said, "Georgia is a sovereign nation and its territorial integrity must be respected," Bush said. And I can't imagine a more hilarious or ironic comment from Bush, given the number of sovereign countries he's violated through the decrees he signed and the wars that he's launched. He doesn't respect anyone's territorial integrity except the United States.
I think you're actually borrowing from John Stewart, because I think he probably used that quote the other night.
Did he really?
Something quite like it anyway.
Oh, I've got to watch the show then.
Yes, I think he mentioned that Bush was either out of touch with reality or out of touch with himself.
I guess Bush really set himself up for that one then. I guess it was that obvious.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, I really wanted to thank you for giving us your legal perspective on this. I think that international law is something that's really, it's becoming clear now that when we say that international law has been watered down, that it's been attacked, that the United States has helped delegitimize it, we can start to see the consequences in a growing number of wars and aggressions in this manner. So,
well, I mean, if I may just put in a final word, I mean, I tend to think the rule of law is terribly important, and it's terribly important that for the rule of law to work, it has to be applied evenly and equally. And we're often told, I think we're told from grade school on, that without laws, we descend into chaos and anarchy, and without international law, we descend into unimaginable bloodshed and anarchy, and it's time to reassert the primacy of international law against those who would degrade it.
So, David, well, thanks again for being on our show today.
My pleasure.